Welcome to Talking About Organizations, a podcast on organization and management studies graciously supported by our listeners. This is a supplement to episode 87, where we are examining Sun Tzu's The Art of War, an ancient text that emerged from the Warring States period in China that lasted from the 5th through the 3rd centuries BC. Participating in the episode were Ralph, Sarah, Pedro, Tom, and our special guest, Paul Kahn. Now, why did we read The Art of War? Well, war is the ultimate form of competition, pitting two adversaries against each other in mortal combat. Militaries are generally very large, complex organizations, and various classic texts of organization studies examined the nature and character of militaries, both in peace and in war. So it made sense to look at one of these texts that is well known and even popularized in business and other settings today. More on that later. The Art of War is not the actual title of the book, but rather one given to it by a French Jesuit priest by the name of Jean-Joseph Marie Amyot when he first translated the text to French around 1772. The actual title was Sun Tzu Bing Fa, or Master Sun's Military Methods, and it describes how to win and avoid total defeat. In Asia, it is perhaps better known as the 13 chapters, as there are indeed 13 chapters in the book, addressing matters from practical battle tactics, to the use of spies, to the use of fire, to the relationship between the military and its sovereign, otherwise known as the king or the state, with insights for modern-day studies in civil-military relations. There are many translations of the text generating different interpretations. There are also disagreements about the ordering and placement of some parts of the text. For example, the Wikipedia page on the Art of War, as of February 2022, compares how five translations of the work came up with very different names for many of the 13 chapters. As we discuss in the episode, this is a text that is best read and discussed in a group setting rather than read on one's own. This way, the different ways of understanding the text can be reconciled in everyone's mind. Now, was there really a Sun Tzu? Perhaps there was, but the work itself is more likely a transcription of a collection of ideas, possibly collected by more than one individual. However, the historical uncertainty of authorship does not diminish the book's impact. Most notably, it greatly influenced Mao Zedong during the Chinese Civil War and subsequent Communist Revolution. The text is written for practical use. It is not theoretical. Each chapter is composed of a numbered list of 20 to 60 statements, not in prose form. So it is very short and easy to navigate, and it relies heavily on taxonomy and many metaphors, which make the key points memorable. For example, chapter 1 opens with five fundamental factors that determine success or failure in war. Chapter 8 is titled The Nine Variables or the Nine Contingencies, depending on the translation. And these are nine things that generals must master in order to properly employ troops. The chapter also has five personality traits of generals that could inevitably contribute to a force's defeat. The Art of War is famous for espousing the uses of indirect methods to achieve one's goals. This was in part because direct methods were costly during the Warring States period. Cities were walled and heavily fortified, making sieges very difficult and risky. The lesson was that attacking an opponent's strength to destroy the enemy may be a dangerous move, such that winning could leave one in a weakened state and vulnerable to attack from another adversary wanting to exploit the situation. Instead, Sun Tzu advocated attacking vulnerabilities, as it reduced the risk of wasting one's own forces, employing deception that causes the enemy to waste time and expend energy, and gaining allies instead of making more enemies, by co-opting instead of destroying defeated troops and cities. Thus, while The Art of War lists many concrete war tactics, it's really a book about strategy and civil-military relations. Whole sections of the book are devoted to the relationship between a military and its sovereign, again, the king or the state. There are admonitions that a sovereign should not meddle too much in military affairs, but that the sovereign must provide adequate resources to the military to meet its objectives, not only in the conduct of war, but also in the aftermath. One can think of The Art of War as a treatise on competition more generally, and surviving in a complex and dynamic competitive environment. This is perhaps why it has found its way into so many other uses. Its simplicity and plasticity allows for easy adaptation to other settings. And in fact, the art of war did not come into American culture through the military. It came through Japanese businesses who were competing with American businesses in the 1970s. Sun Tzu's indirect methods applied to economics, and the Japanese were winning. Today, there are endless adaptations ranging from the art of war for business, promoting feminism, improving one's own personal relationships, even becoming a better golfer. But are such adaptations appropriate, and who gets to decide that? Now, thinking about these questions, we reflected on the uses and misuses of classical texts and authorship that we have touched on in previous episodes. One idea we discussed is to what extent is the text used critically to explain something, both in a good and a bad sense? Is the classic text presented within its context in ways that add value to the points the author is making? A lesser adaptation simply pulls quotes out of a classic text and uses it solely to validate preconceived notions in the author's mind. If you can blot out the references to the classic text and effectively lose no meaning, then you're probably not reading a good adaptation. And that's all for now. We invite you to listen to the episode, available in two parts on our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com or through your favorite podcast streaming service. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their generous support and the support of our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening and have a great day.